And hello from Damien O'Mara. You're very welcome to the Rugby Show, RTE Sports Rugby Podcast. This is episode 2 for the 2016 RBS Six Nations. Disappointment for Ireland again at the weekend, despite leading 9-3 at halftime, beaten by 10-9 by France. A very interesting conversation to come with Bernard Jackman as we look back on the weekend that has been. And it's good to have your company. I am Wesless this week, so you will have to put up with me all on my own. Before we start and before we hear from Bernard Jackman, a quick update on the injury situation as of Monday afternoon from the Irish squad. Sean O'Brien, a grade 2 hamstring tear, so he will miss the England game. His participation in the Six Nations beyond that, we will just have to simply wait and see. Dave Kearney, an injury to the AC joint in his shoulder. He's very likely to miss the England game. Jonathan Sexton has a whiplash type of injury, but is said to be feeling better and will train later on this week. Jared Payne also has a hamstring injury, grade 1 in his case. He won't train this week, but Keane Healy and Mike Ross will train with the Ireland squad later on this week, and then will return to Leinster, most likely to play for Leinster in the Pro 12 at the weekend. So that is the update on the walking wounded after a very, very physical encounter at the Stade de France on Saturday afternoon. France, the eventual winners on a 10-9 scoreline. We'll hear from Bernard in just a minute. Before we do, though, let's hear the post-match reaction from coach and captain, both of whom spoke to Michael Corcoran.
I can't fault the character of the players again. I think they really rolled their sleeves up. You don't want to admit you're tiring toward the end, but I did think that we were tiring toward the end a little bit, and our resources were being well and truly tapped. At the same time, in that first half, I felt we started with the impetus we needed. I thought we were pretty accurate. We just couldn't quite finish. I felt we were a little bit unlucky there. It would have been a fortuitous try, but there was clearly no knock on, and Dave Kearney goes over and scores, and that's a disappointment. And it actually happened in the second half as well, where one rebounds off Andrew Trimble's head, and he's got one man to beat, and you just know it's not going to be your day when you don't get those calls.
It was a rather frustrating afternoon, wasn't it? I mean, it looked as if there were one or two instances of foul play on that pitch as well that maybe weren't dealt with correctly.
Well, there's only one man in charge, and we can't influence that. What we've been told and what was delivered are two entirely different things. But we knew that we had to take as much of the destiny into our own hands and try to deliver the best performance we could. And there were elements of it that were good. I felt we put them under some pressure with some good kicking early in the game. We got some good field position, and we exerted a fair bit of pressure. I just felt we didn't quite get the reward for that pressure, either through a couple of decisions that were made, and also because we didn't quite hold on to the ball in pretty tough conditions, admittedly.
The second half of the game, I mean, certainly when they made the changes up front, it made a huge and significant difference.
Yeah, again, I challenge anyone to look at those and look at the angles. And one of the disadvantages of trying to stay really square and straight when you're scrummaging is that, if somebody does shift the axis of that, it is very hard to push against something. And so, it's a huge frustration for us, because we know that that those guys who've come into the side to be in the tight five are doing a really good job of trying to both commit fully physically and as correctly as they possibly can in that scrummage.
A very frustrating afternoon.
Yeah, really frustrating, unfortunately.
It was obviously a very tough game, and we felt we were very much in control at halftime. We dominated a lot of the game that we wanted to dominate. The territory, we kept a hold of the ball. We made them make tackles, which is what we wanted to do. I think we'll obviously be disappointed in the second half that we just didn't make them make as many tackles. We didn't force them onto the back foot the way we had done in the first half.
Certainly, there's a lot of questions of you, particularly in that key period running up to the scoring of the try.
Yeah, look, they did. They obviously came at us in the second half, and I think by and large defensively we felt pretty much under control. We're still getting our hits, we're still getting bits and pieces. Obviously they changed the front row and very much changed their tactics, which is disappointing that think it was disappointing the way that went, and ultimately probably cost us the game when you look at it. You know, it's I think from having dominance in the first half to those sort of changes making a difference is disappointing from our point of view.
I know it's easy for fellas like me to be wise afterwards, but you had a lot of possession, a lot of territory in the opening 40 minutes. Probably should have made more of it on the scoreboard.
Yeah, like absolutely. You know, I think when you come to places and you know when you're away from home, you got to take as many of the opportunities. You know, I think it's an imperfect game, so it's hard to take every opportunity. But I think you got to take more than we did. Mm. I think probably again, like we did against Wales, we got into the 22 plenty of times and probably once too often we sort of let them out too easily. You know, we you know, silly knock-ons, isolated. You know, just bits and pieces like that. It's just a bit disappointing.
That changing room must be like a hospital emergency ward over there.
Yeah, look, there's a few battered and bruised bodies. You know, I think, you can never fault the effort. It was there in abundance, you know, our physicality and everything, and I think it was just disappointing not that we couldn't just get ahead of them in that first half. And, look, ultimately, against a quality team like that, if you can't put distance between them, they're going to get a purple patch. And, you know, unfortunately, they scored in their purple patch.
And just a final question. I mean, a hugely tough start to the Six Nations Championship. Two physically bruising matches within the space of 6 days.
Yeah, look, you know, that's the Six Nations. That's why it's a joy to play in when you win those tight games. And it's not so much fun when you lose them. You know, that was a really, really tough game. Last week was a really tough game, but I think there are two games that we look at and probably look back with a little bit of disappointment. Mm-hmm. that they were there for the winning and we probably left opportunities at key moments out there, which again is disappointing.
That's the Irish head coach Joe Schmidt and captain Rory Best chatting to Michael Corcoran after that game on Saturday. Let's get some reaction from former Irish international and Grenoble coach Bernard Jackman joins us from France. Bernard, how are you?
Very good, thanks.
I suppose let's cut straight to the chase. On the field of play over the course of the 80 minutes, how much of a complaint can Ireland have with the ultimate outcome?
Listen, I think the game was there for the taking, and Ireland would be very disappointed that they didn't push on and put the game out of reach. We have to take into account how inexperienced this French team is and probably lacking leadership. I think Dino Vez will be absolutely delighted that he's never blood, you know, some young blood in two games and managed to come out the right side of it with wins, which will give them massive confidence and help their team's long-term development. But us, we'd be massively disappointed that at 9-3 up, not to score in the second half, not to have scored in the second half against Wales. It's just not good enough from when you compare it to what Ireland have been doing under the last 2 years under Joe.
So where has it gone wrong, or what has changed that has robbed us of what, let's be very honest, was never a massively ruthless killer instinct, but has robbed us of the ability to see out games?
Yeah, I agree we weren't ruthless in terms of being able to pull away from teams. If you look back over the last two years, we've been able to grind out wins in tight games, and you know, we won both Six Nations on points difference, but we were better at, I suppose, managing the game at the death or in the period where the opposition things weren't happening for them. We seemed to be able to score points at those times and then rely on our defence or rely on our discipline to not give away easy opportunities. And I think that it's a multitude of things. Defensively, I think we're pretty solid, but our discipline at the weekend let us down. You know, we generally were a team when we're winning Six Nations that were always under eight, nearly always under eight penalties a match, and I think we went up to was it 15 or something against France, which is way too high, you know, and we don't have the. We never were a team who scored tries freely. We relied on our line-out maul. We relied on, I suppose, building countless phases in the opposition 22 and eventually, you know, getting over the line. Or we relied on kind of really smart pre-planned moves that Joe was brilliant at, and he was able to analyse a weakness in the opposition, and we were able to get scores from that. But if you compare us to France, if you look at Ireland's attack, our best chance of going forward was from those pre-planned power plays. And in fairness, some of them nearly worked. It was a last-gasp tackle that kind of saved France at times. But actually, France were much more dangerous on turnover counter-attack, which is, you know, a huge percentage of the time you have the ball. So I think that's probably something we probably regret that we haven't got better at, is that ability to be good off kind of structured play and also be equally good off unstructured play. And now France are probably too far the other side, but it's something that we were probably winning so many games we didn't really give enough importance to, our time or whatever, because there's no doubt Joe can coach teams to be very good at, in those unstructured plays, but unfortunately we seem to be a lot less dangerous when we go out of structure.
So, but from a coaching perspective, does that require just more work on the training ground? Does it require maybe being somewhat less structured and just letting the players play?
I think, well, there's two ways to do it. It sounds crazy, but you can actually bring structure to unstructured play, as in that you're not 100% sure where the ball is going to come from, where the source is going to be, but then you can have rules and principles that kind of get you into your shape, and it's the most attractive ball to play off, because if you know opposition defenses are out of sync, it's harder for them to get into shape in their defence quickly. So, and also it comes down to individuals as well. So if you look at what Noves has done, is he's picked guys who are very good in open space, and he took a risk with Fakatara, who hadn't played rugby union for 2 years until the match the previous week. Bring in Teddy Thoma in, he'd only played 60 minutes in 6 months. He knew they were going to be short of match fitness. He knew they weren't going to be as probably detailed in terms of their lines of running, in terms of their defensive organisation. But he believed that, okay, when the game opens up, they have the ability to beat people one-on-one. And it's like in football, you know, there's guys who have a knack of scoring goals and they have a massive value. And in rugby union, when the game is unstructured, there's guys who have the ability to beat people that are worth having a serious look at in your team.
So then at the same time, you can't build, you know, make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. So are there players there that Joe needs to integrate? Are there maybe changes in terms of the structure of the back line that he needs to look at?
Well, listen, I think that for me, your fullback's ability to be creative and to be dangerous in attack is massively important in a modern game. I think the game has changed from having a fullback who is really good at the basics. It's obviously important, but the guys who give you that little bit of X factor, that the ability to have big moments in games, you look at Stuart Hogg for Scotland, you look at Mike Brown for England, Maidard is very, very dangerous. They're the guys that give you something. So for me, I would prefer to see, at the moment, Rob isn't in the form of his life. He's obviously had injuries, etc. And Rob is capable of being that attacking threat as well, but unfortunately, recently, it hasn't been as evident. So for me, I think that I would much prefer Jared Payne at fullback. I think I like the idea of Zeebo at fullback, but unfortunately, I know people said he had a great game against Wales, but you have to have a basic level of defensive positioning and defensive quality before you can look at the pluses he brings. So I would go with Payne for me, who's a very good defender, makes very few errors, but gives you that oomph in attack. And then on the wings, in fairness, we don't have guys like they have, Akatara and Teddy Thoma. But probably, you know, if you take Payne out of the centre, then you bring McCluskey in, who's that power athlete, who's very dynamic, gets his hands free in offloads. And, you know, there straight away you have two changes that, you know, you ring Rose as an alternative either to go in instead of McCluskey, who's got that outside break, who's got that pace, who's more creative in attack. So there is options. I'm not saying we've got, you know, we could change everyone on our back line, but there's a three guys that you would say. And also, you know, if you look at the case of McCluskey and Ringrose, you know, they're very, they would, you know, if you're looking at next World Cup, you would say, well, let's get games with these guys. And like, look at Kamara, the French back row is 21, Shah on the bench is 21, Bezzi and Polisson, you don't have a huge amount of experience. Dante's 23, Vakatara and Teddy Thoma are young. You know, they're going to be, if Nubez sticks with those guys, they're going to be very, very, very good international players. And I think France will be a very good international team in time.
One of the questions that's been raised about Gary Ringrose is physically, is he ready for Test rugby at that level?
Yeah, he is. He is.
You think so?
The biggest, 100%, yeah. The biggest difference between international level and provincial level is pace. And physically, obviously, it's difficult, but for me, as a 13, I think that it's pace and ability to have time on the ball. And if you look at what him play, he always has that, and he has that pace to get him into really good positions or get him out of trouble. And I think that I know it's a long time ago, but I don't think particularly in the backs that age should be a hindrance. And I think he's powerful enough play at that level.
Okay. In terms of the individual performances then on Saturday, who stood up for you? Who are the players that can leave Paris with their heads held high?
I think Robbie and Jared Payne, in fairness, got through a mountain of work. Trimble made a few errors, but he was very important defensively in terms of shutting down the French attack when they went down his wing. I thought the forwards, to be honest, were under pressure. There wasn't a huge amount of Irish players who had big games, to be honest. Whereas the week before, I thought that, you know, our performance level was very high. Whether it was just the mindset of going into Wales, to being underdogs and being questioned, and then obviously getting a good performance without obviously the win. And then everybody, look, it was very hard to really, unless you really analysed France and understood where they're coming from, it was hard to be afraid of them. And obviously Ireland probably maybe felt that they had the tools to beat them, but France improved drastically in a week, and the relief of getting a win gave them big confidence. And even though they were poor in the first half, they threw 16 offloads to one. They made mistakes, but they were the ones who were probing and having had a little bit more freedom to try things. And I think that Ireland tired because of it's a different kind of challenge defensively playing against France than playing against Wales, where you know where the tackle is going to be and you just have to front up and make it, and that doesn't take much thought. Against France, you're always stressed because you know they can go from anywhere, and you know they've got individuals who can beat you, and that drains you quicker than a pre-programmed type of game where you just know what's coming.
And you look at it then, you know, the loss of key players early on in the game, to lose Sean O'Brien after 20 minutes, to lose Dave Kearney after 29, to have to dip into your reserve so early in the game, it just further, you know, exacerbates that issue around fatigue and endurance.
Listen, 100%. Very little went wrong very little went right for Ireland. We were already, I suppose, we're low on players with injuries and depth, but to lose Sexton, you know, in the end when we needed to probably get some field position and to try and win the game, to lose Sean and Dave Kearney early and Mike McCarthy, you know, it was far from ideal, and everything kind of went right for France. The referee wasn't as probably strict as he needed to be, but having said that, you know, that happens. We've rode our luck on certain occasions. We've had a good injury profile in the past. What you got to say is, okay, at 9-3 up, we had opportunities to close out the game and put it beyond reach, and we didn't. And I think, listen, this Irish team are unbelievably driven and focused on winning. And they sometimes, I know we lost, we had a good World Cup with Argentina, but that game was over early, whereas this game was a game that we were ahead, similar to Wales, but we didn't close out. I think that's something that they want to learn lessons from, and they have to. Yeah?
But if you talk about that then, you know, being up against France at the weekend, you go back to the Welsh game, 13-0 up after 28 minutes when Johnny Sexton converted the Conor Murray try. When that starts to happen to you on a couple of occasions, does it start to seep into the psychology as the game goes on?
Oh, for sure it does. Let's be honest, I think that the reason we were all so pessimistic before the Wales game was because, well, certainly for me, it was a worry of the fact what the Argentinian defeat might have done to them in terms of their confidence, because they were going on a massive surge of positivity and belief that this game plan can get you where you need to go, which, you know, I'm sure they were thinking of at least the semi-final. And they were used to, you know, being unbelievably competitive. Even the games they lost, going back to the New Zealand test, you know, it was the last minute. Ireland very rarely were beaten out the gate. The Argentinian game, I was afraid, would have knocked a little bit of belief out of them. And then that was magnified by the fact that the players went back to the provinces and didn't get, in general, you know, many good results. The form wasn't great. And the doubt was, okay, well, how is Joe going to be able to rebuild that confidence, minus like O'Connell, in a short period? But the first half against Wales, for me, was a big shock in that, or not shock, but surprise in that how good we were. But maybe that's why we weren't able to finish them off, the Welsh off, and we were pretty much, we spent most of the second half defending, and similarly against France, that we got ourselves into a good position, but maybe just as a little bit of lack of belief, that we, you know, we're in the right spot to finish teams off, and because that belief was winning us those games where we should have been losing in the past. So it certainly looks like it could be an issue, because you know, as I said, if you were to read the signs in the first half, you would have said, okay, well, Ireland are going to win quite comfortably.
So the work then in Carlton House and behind the scenes over the next couple of weeks in the run up to the England game, someone like Enda McNulty is going to earn his corn as much as Joe Schmidt and the coaching staff.
Yeah, I think they will. I think there's also, it's just, let's be honest, we didn't, the game plan is such that you have to, there's not much margin for error, and unfortunately, you know, against France, we made too many handling errors, and our set piece malfunctioned. Even in the first half, you know, we kicked to the corner early doors. I thought it was the right decision, but you know, for me, it was a poor tactical choice to go for a front peel, because if you looked at France the week before against Italy, their weakness was the maul, and we, you know, we've been very good at converting 5 metre line out opportunities and mauls into tries. So we let them off the hook. Then we had another line out outside of 22. We got done for leaving the 15 metre too early. Those little errors were very prevalent in our game. And as I said, it's a game plan that if everybody perfects it from A to Z, you know, we have a very good chance of winning. But unfortunately, the weekend and the game against Wales, there was just these little errors. You know, Joe's talked about the try that he felt should have been given, which bounced off Robbie's chest. You know, that's a simple switch with an outside trail. And you know, Robbie, okay, technically it wasn't a knock-on, but, you know, it wasn't perfected. It wasn't supposed to knock off his stomach and go into Dave Carney's hands. It was supposed to be caught. So there were the little errors that cost us, and I think that it's as much getting those right in the training field and repeating it and building that momentum and getting guys to maybe improve their concentration levels which is going to make the difference.
Would you fear for Ireland in Twickenham?
Listen, it's a big test for us. If it's a slight lack of confidence, we need to find that confidence quickly, because, you know, I'm sure we're going to be out Sean, I'm sure we're going to be out Dave Carney, potentially I'd imagine Healy and Mike Ross will come in, which into the squad anyway, which will obviously give us a little bit of a better scrum success. But the problem is with scrummaging, a lot of scrummaging is confidence and momentum, and if people start to second guess the system, which can happen when you suffer you know, two bad scrum days in a row, people can start to doubt, and then you change personnel and it magnifies that. So I'd be worried about our scrum in Twickenham, for sure. And I just think that England are going to get massive rewards out of having gone to Scotland, having gone to Italy, and obviously racked up points late in the game. And Eddie Jones is very shrewd. And just, you know, while we're struggling for a little momentum, struggling for a little bit of a good fortune, they seem to be, you know, on an upward curve.
Can I just ask you about the scrum? Obviously, it's one of your areas of specialty. It was interesting that Greg Feek, apparently, and Joe Schmidt stayed behind to speak to the match referee on Saturday to fully try and understand how he was going to interpret the scrum. When you've spent the week preparing for maybe one expectation, and very quickly you realise that the referee is judging things in a completely different way, how quick can you turn that around on the pitch as a group of players?
I think that's what people value experience and leadership for. I think that it's your ability to problem solve. Everybody goes into a game with a plan. It's like a boxing match. You had a plan until you get hit. You have to be able to adapt quickly and adapt smartly. And I know that Ireland felt that French scrummaging was illegal. I'll be honest with you. I've yet to see two international packs scrum for a whole game and somebody not to be doing something illegal. And most of the time, it's prison rules. You adapt and you find your way to either stable the scrum or get your angle or ideally go forward. And we weren't. Half time, in fairness, we did against Wales. We did find a correction, and probably that was something that we'd be disappointed with, because in fairness, our scrum in the first half was good, but obviously when they brought on their two better scrummagers in the second half, either we weren't able to get the information from the coach's box onto the pitch. I'd imagine we probably were getting the information on, but with fatigue, with changing the personnel, under the stress of what was happening, particularly those scrums on under our own post, which was just coming scrum after scrum, we just weren't able to get a clear change in our technique or our tactics to try and stop that. So that's obviously, and that happens for every team. You know, halftime is obviously the best time because you have your iPads, you have your footage, you have a chance, people can. But I think that, and maybe Rossi, in fairness, that's where we missed him, because he's a guy who's able to think on his feet, and Rory has a lot of things to worry about in terms of, obviously, you know, being the captain, his line out throwing, his general play, and Jack McGrath's a very good player, and he's really, really come on, but again, he probably doesn't have the international experience or the profile that comes with being a leader in the scrum.
What have you made of Rory Best's captaincy so far?
No, so I think Rory's getting a lot of criticism because people are questioning his ability to have managed a referee, but I just think the South African referee at the weekend, he wasn't really taking on board what Rory said, and I think he got influenced a little bit by the atmosphere in Stade de France, and all Rory can do is pose the question, and it's up to other people to say, oh, if Paul had said it, or if Brian had said it, or if Rog had said it, he might listen more. But sometimes, if you look back on those guys' careers, even though they're phenomenal captains, there was times where they couldn't get inside the referee. And I think it's too early to judge Rory. But I know for one thing that the players will follow Rory to anywhere you ask them to go. And I think he's going to be a good captain for
Okay. him. On the referee, is it sour grapes for us to be questioning the extent to which, you know, the decision against Dave Kearney?
I wouldn't be massively fond of... I wouldn't be a fan of going after the referee post-game. I think that in our sport, it's something that we value. And there's a process, you know. Take 24 hours, study the tape, clip the images that you're not happy with, write your report, and send it to him, but it doesn't need to be. I personally don't believe that it's needs to be done in public.
Okay, before I get your opinion on the other games, then just to you're talking then, you would look to make changes at full back, and then that would obviously necessitate a change at centre. Are there any other changes you'd look at that you think we could be strengthened by bringing fresh bodies in for the England game?
Yeah, I think that. I'd be doubtful whether Mike McCarthy would play. I know they'd say it's a concussion and he'll do his head injury assessment, whatever. But personally, it's 2 weeks. He was pretty badly knocked out.
He looked quite distressed.
Yeah, I'd prefer, to be honest, if he didn't play for his own safety. I know that maybe that's not medically backed up, but just my own point of view, I think that Dunica Ryan go in there. He deserves a chance anyway, and it protects. It looks after Mike McCarthy in the back row. Tommy O'Donnell will come in. You know, he'll do a good job. Jamie was quite quiet. You know, whether you give CJ a go at eight, maybe look at Reece Ruddock. I don't know. Jamie had a good game against Wales, so that'd be pretty harsh. And then, you know, I think that for the bench spot, I'd like to keep Marmion. I know he lost out, obviously, to Redzer for France, but I think Marmion is a player, you know, that's going to be around for the next while, and probably Redzer, you know, maybe one more year, but I think Marmion is in form for Connacht. He's been really good, and he would give you that impact off the bench. And then the centres, yeah, if they put Payne full back, well, then that would open up for either McCluskey, or maybe because it's England, McCluskey. But I'd love to see Ringrose in there at some stage.
Okay. Your assessment then of the landscape of the Championship, having seen Wales beat Scotland and England blow Italy away in the second half, who's the team to beat?
Oh, it's between England and Wales. I think France of England at home near the end, and France, I think next year Six Nations will be the... I think France will be in a good spot because there is a lot of talent in France, and Noves's ability to give them that little bit of confidence, and again, I believe his biggest battle isn't on match days for Six Nations. It's what changes he can make in French rugby to give him more preparation time and limit the player load of his players. It's between Wales and England for me to win it, I think England are going to win it under Eddie Jones. They obviously have us next. They play two away games. And
okay, then just to finish, the news obviously confirmed yesterday that Robbie Henshaw will leave Connacht at the end of the season. It's not been confirmed, but the dogs on the street know that it'll be the RDS that he'll be playing his home games at next year. Is it maybe a two-parted question? Is it the right move for the player, and is it the right move for Irish rugby?
I don't think it's the right move for Irish rugby. To be honest, I think what Lamont's done down there has been exceptional, and I think Connacht in the past, and I benefited from them. I'm a Leinster man, but I went to Connacht to get game time to develop, and then I came back, and you could say, oh, it's pretty harsh on Connacht, but it was. But at the time, Connacht were never in the Champions Cup. Now, hopefully, Connacht will be on their own merits, and not just because another Irish province has won it. And Robbie is one of their own, and I think for them, their future has to be that guys who are developed by them from the province want to stay there. The other side of the coin is every player should have the choice who he plays for. And if Robbie believes that a move is the best thing for him, I completely understand that. And I think you have to be allowed to do that. But I think that I feel sorry for Connacht. I think it's disappointing for them because they can't let this stop them lose momentum. It's about discovering the next Robbie. It's just about getting results on the pitch with him for the rest of the season and then beyond.
Bernard, appreciate your time as always. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Damien. Bye-bye.
The thoughts of Bernard Jackman. Of course, you can read his contributions to the RTE website, rte.ie/sport. Plenty of rugby coverage across all platforms to enjoy over the coming weeks. If you're listening to this in time for Against the Head, RTE2 television, 7 o'clock on Monday evenings, you can watch it back on The Player. Of course, all of Ireland's games in the RBS Six Nations live and exclusive across both RTE radio and television, and plenty of analysis, insight and features and everything else across Game on 2FM and Saturday and Sunday Sport on radio. That is it from me for this week, from Damien O'Mara, until we chat again, hopefully in the company of Wes. Thanks for your time.